It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, everybody, J.J. Cooper, Josh Norris, Jeff Ponce, Baseball America Prospect Podcast. Here we are again. It's a big one this week. We had the Hot Sheet Show, and we announced that Connor Griffin is Baseball America's 2025 Minor League Player of the Year. Today, or as we record this, we also announced that Jonah Tong is Baseball America's pitcher, Minor League Pitcher of the Year this year. Mets, Jonah Tong, Pirates shortstop, Connor Griffin. But today on the podcast, we figured, you know, we got to talk a little bit about it. We got to talk to Connor on the Hot Sheet Show. But we wanted to go into more detail. We wanted to give you much more background, much more deep of a deep dive into Connor Griffin's season and Connor Griffin, the prospect. So we're going to do that here. Great to see you, Josh. Great to see you, Jeff. I think, thankfully, I can say that all three of us got to see Connor Griffin play in person this year. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I didn't know you saw him, JJ.
Oh, yeah. Futures game, baby.
Oh, yeah. That thing.
Josh and myself actually saw, I would describe it as we were there when the gospel was written of Connor. We were there on the backfields. And I want to give Josh credit as well. Some of his reporting in the offseason, in the preseason, you know, he does his article of like guys that are popping out the scouts. If I'm not mistaken, you talked a little bit about the improved stuff from Jonah Tong at that point, and we're really early on it. I'm gonna pat us on the back here. We don't do this often, but this is the value of reading Baseball America and having a sub.
I will acknowledge that, even though I do not remember it. So the only thing I want to take credit for is that I put my camera in a spot where it absolutely should not have been in Bradenton, but that's the joy of being there 4 hours early. It's kind of like sneaking around like the Pink Panther. And it worked out that he hit a triple, and I had it from like three different angles on two different cameras off of Trevor Harrison.
And I had it on my phone as well, because I went over and shot it, and I think we had another camera too. We had like three or four.
That is the first time I had seen you since you got hired at BA.
And let me just note, if you're watching on YouTube, if you watch these regularly, you have seen that triple. You're seeing it again on this one, but you have seen that triple probably at least six or seven times, because I do the editing of these videos, and I love that video because it perfectly illustrates the athleticism, the power, the speed, the swing, all these aspects of Connor Griffin. So to kind of jump in on this, we'll talk a little bit about, okay, we always analyze this. We always talk this through. And so one question you could kind of ask, and that we often get asked, is, so how tough was the decision this year? It was a great year. I mean, again, Tong is someone that you could easily say makes a case, even with 113 innings plus his major league time, to be player of the year. Kevin McGonigal, I think you could very much make an easy case for in a normal year. But I look at this year, when we got to the end of it, we were talking about it in early August, I feel like, and saying, depends on what McGonigal does the rest of the year, depends on what Griffin does, depends what Tong maybe does. We got to the end of August. We got to looking ahead, and I would put it this way. We knew that Erie was going to play Altoona in the playoffs, so we said, Jeff, plan to go there. But by the time we even used, you were booking to go there, I feel like by then we kind of knew you were not going to talk to Kevin McGonigal for Minor League Player of the Year.
Yeah, and I don't think that was necessarily a knock on McGonigal. I think it was, and this is something I feel like if you look historically back on, you know, some of the guys that have come up, top prospects that have turned into superstars, often as they level up, their play levels up as well. And that's something that we saw from Griffin, where he didn't just get better from week to week and month to month throughout the season. When he made that jump from low A to high A, his overall line in comparison to his peers was better in high A than it had been in low A. He then moved up, and it was only 4 weeks of time, about 20, 21, 22 games prior to the playoffs for Griffin at Double A. When you consider how young he is at 19 years old in the same league as Kevin McGonigal, and actually produced an even better line than he had in High A. So I think you sort of look at that, and he talked a little bit about this, and we have some quotes from him in this regard within the Player of the Year article. And he talked a little bit about it on the Hot Sheet show yesterday. He's constantly making adjustments, constantly looking to improve, you know, taking on the struggles that he might have at a particular level early on, head on, and figuring out, all right, what do we need to do to adjust it? And he has sort of that natural athleticism and aptitude to be able to make those changes. And, you know, I think when we do dig into the annuals of great prospects over the years that we've written up and covered, the guys who do succeed and turn into superstars at the major league level are guys that have that aptitude. And I think that's what, you know, makes that's what makes, I almost called him Bubba Chandler. That's what makes Connor Griffin stand out from the rest, in my opinion.
And Josh, if we look at it, Connor Griffin played the same levels as Kevin McGonigal, more lower level time, I would say, than McGonigal, but low A, high A, double A for both of them. He's younger than McGonigal. He had a higher batting average. He had a higher on base. McGonigal had more power, had better slugging percentage. But probably the other separator there is he's better defensively as well. And he played 122 games, 563 plate appearances. McGonigal missed some time, 88 games, 397 plate appearances. I feel like when we added it all up, it's nothing against McGonigal, but Griffin had the rate stats generally. He had the counting stats. He has the speed. He has the defense, and he has an age advantage. They're just really, it was kind of like check, 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 check.
Right. And you know, I'm not going to hold the injury against him. Stuff happens. And I'm not going to hold his age against him because that's how it works. He was drafted first, but you know, he checked every box at every level. I really don't know how to, any other way to put it, except he has it, man. You just watch him and he's got the star factor. He's got the it factor. He's electric in everything he does. I'll say this, when I did those backfield stories, the one thing that kept coming up was shortstop or outfield. And everybody seemed to say probably outfield. Well, that's changed. It's probably shortstop at this point. And it's probably a pretty dang good shortstop. And that kind of speaks to what Jeff was saying, like he obviously worked at it. And, you know, I think if you put him in center field too, a pretty dang good center fielder. Like he wasn't just some guy they stuck out there in spring training. He was making like highlight reel plays in the outfield. This is athleticism, aptitude, tools, skills, as the kids like to say, aura. Like he's got it all. It just jumps off the page. Like I wanted to vamp a little bit and go get my notepad upstairs, but I wrote at the end of my notes, it said like everything this kid does is magic. He is earmarked for superstardom as clearly as any player I've ever seen.
Kratz, let's talk about Omaha Steaks. And it's not just steaks. It's chicken wings. It's smash burgers. Big deli style Franks. There are a number of categories that you can hit all in one place. They've been doing it for a long time. They're the best in the biz. And if you got a good filet, life's good, man.
But you got to finish every meal with some delectable desserts, too. They have those, too. To go along with these delicious steaks.
Mm-hmm. Apple caramel tarts on the list, among many other menu items to check out. Be the hero that orders Omaha Steaks and is the most popular person in your household. So get fired up for fall grilling with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Red Hot Sale event. And for an extra $35 off, yeah, $35 off on top of that, use promo code FOUL at checkout. That's 50% off at omahasteaks.com and an extra $35 off with promo code FOUL at checkout. See site for details.
So, okay, that just jumps into when we say what stood out about Connor Griffin's season. So I would say like now we're going to take a little bit through the journey. You know, Jeff wrote the piece up at baseballamerica.com about this. We talked to him again on the Hot Sheet show. The thing that jumps out to me most about this season is how far Connor Griffin has come in what I would really describe as, you could say, 2 years, right? Because the summer before your draft year for a high school prospect, is very important, is significant in how you develop and how you're viewed. And I would say that at that point, Connor Griffin could largely be summarized as he's really athletic. He's really tooled up. There's a lot of potential here. However, there's also a lot of risk, a lot of concern about the hit tool, a lot of concern about, is this going to be a hitter who fills out and develops into a well-rounded player, or is he going to be one of those tooled up players who can run and can hit for power? But the problem is if you only make contact, you know, 45, 50% of the time, you swing at wrong pitches, all these things, then it doesn't really matter, right? And it seems almost crazy to think that that was an honest to goodness. That was not a bad evaluators, bad scouting viewpoint of Connor Griffin at the time. Connor Griffin talked about it himself when we talked to him on the Hot Sheet show, that he had an arm bar, right? Like when you're looking at swings, an arm bar where you are not really kind of having that same fluidity is something significant to worry about in a hit tool. He had swing and miss issues. He had to adjust to hit velocity better. He had to get bigger and stronger, which he's added 15 pounds since he was drafted. All these things where I would say that Jeff, like one of the things that jumps out about it is the, it's kind of the summary of scouting, but also the summary of how players at these ages that we're talking about with teenagers can change so dramatically so quickly. If you look at Connor Griffin now compared to what he looked like going into his senior year of high school, they almost look like two different people.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you look at the body, number one, that he certainly has added muscle. And I think that naturally happens as you age. You know, he's not going to hit his physical peak until he's probably 25, 26. Right. So there's more muscle, more strength that could potentially be added onto this frame. I think you even look at Roman Anthony over the last 2 years from when he entered pro ball to the guy that, you know, stepped on the field at Fenway when he made his debut, different body types, right? And he was always a bigger, stronger guy. Griffin is even bigger and more athletic. And, you know, I think like you talked about, you know, the improvements in the swing, obviously, a big part of it for him was just like the two times I've talked to him about it, because I talked to him about the swing change a little bit at the Futures game, I had some quotes there, and then kind of revisited it when I presented him with the award and had an opportunity to chat with him a little bit. I think it was just keeping it simple. Like for him, it was like, hey, like I was doing all this other stuff and just trying to more or less like move my arms in a fluid way, engage my lower half, get more into my back leg, and be less on my front foot. And I think even more so than the arm bar, when you watch his lower half, and he talked about this a little bit on the Hot Sheet show yesterday, he really does get into his back leg. He was very forward on his front foot quite often, which, you know, if you're stuck in between a little bit or ahead on a breaking ball, you can look really goofy. You know, that's very much like a fastball kind of a swing. And I think it allowed him to make those adjustments, still be on time with the fastball and catch those breaking balls out front and be able to do damage. And I think some of it was timing stuff. Some of it was just improving how he moved. You know, he talked about that sort of first move, and I think you see that's a lot better than it was when he was in high school. And I think the remarkable part is that, you know, he kind of worked on it with his father, who is, you know, I think a college softball coach. So mm-hmm. Credit to him. But, you know, as a dad who works and just through BP about an hour ago to my son, it gives me some inspiration. But I think it's, you know, he's just such an interesting player, an interesting athlete. And I think he's very self-aware just in terms of his abilities as well. But we were talking about shortstop. He really did, you know, talk about how center field comes much more naturally to him than shortstop did. And that in high school, he was really just out there trying to be athletic and make plays. And now he's thinking a little bit more about playing the position, you know, where to be positioned. And, you know, playing it a little bit more controlled. And he's always had the big arm, you know, was a two-way player in high school and a pretty decent pitching prospect in addition to being the hitter that he is. So he's maybe the first guy that I can say I really do think we have 60 or better tools maybe across the board, especially as this hit tool has continued to improve with each level. It's just a very unique player.
So Josh, like with a player like this, you got to see him in Greensboro.
Just one game.
Saw him homer, if I remember correctly, in that one game. And saw him in spring training. Talked to people about him through the year. Yeah, I think the thing I'll set it up this way. I love that you shared a story recently when you are talking about the greats in the minors, right? Great prospects, right? One of the ways you know that you're talking about great prospects is when you're having a completely different conversation with someone who has nothing to do with that team, right? That prospect. And a name ends up coming up, right? You've gotten that with Connor Griffin, haven't you?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, my favorite one is a bunch of years ago. It has nothing to do with Connor Griffin. But I was doing my Eastern League top 20 call, and I said, and one of the scouts was like, I don't want to talk about these guys. I want to talk about Joey Gallo. And I'm like, he's not in the Eastern League. I don't care. I want to talk about Joey Gallo. Like, all right. This is not very helpful, but we'll talk about Joey Gallo. One of my favorite people, that scout. But that was a really weird conversation. But yeah, some of these guys do bring up these guys unprompted, or every so often you'll get a text out of the blue like, hey, this guy is really good. You know, last year, Jaden Ham came up, and it hasn't gone as great for him, but it was a guy, everybody started getting texts about him. A better example is Ellie De La Cruz a couple years ago. My social life can be summed up as I was getting more texts about Ellie De La Cruz than like my own family at that point. Connor Griffin came up every year like, hey, this guy, I'm not going to say the comps, but he was getting absurd comps early in the year, and they all are on their way to coming true right now. He was just on the front of everybody's lips all year. It's not a fluke, man.
So I want to get further into kind of our impressions and what has stood out and what our reporting, what we've gotten on Connor Griffin this year. And we'll do more of that right after this quick break.
Hiring the right people fast keeps your team moving forward without losing momentum. Every day a position stays open is a day you're missing productivity, creativity, and growth. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed Sponsored Jobs helps you stand out and hire fast. With Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, Sponsored Jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. One thing I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast because it allows you to rapidly sort through candidates based on your preferences. Plus, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/baseballamerica. Just go to Indeed.com/baseballamerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/baseballamerica. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
And we're back. So I call this in-person looks, this topic, but it's really more than that. It's really just our impressions, what we've gathered about Connor Griffin. And so I'm going to start, and I'll then go to Josh and then to Jeff. So one of the things that jumps out to me, there are two things that I would say from seeing Connor Griffin in person, talking to him, seeing him play in person, but also watching him a lot across the season, dialing him up on Synergy Sports and watching. One is, like, I do think if you If you are listening to the podcast and you have not seen video, if you have not seen pictures of Connor Griffin now, like, I do think it's worth seeing, like, just how big he is now. He is, as he described himself, 6'4", 225 pounds. That is like very built for a teenager playing baseball. That's built for a teenager getting ready to go into the NFL. Let's just be clear. Like, that all true. But the thing I would say with it is, and we can talk about his speed, and we can talk about his arm, and we can talk about all these things. The thing that jumps out to me is, asked him about this on our hot sheet show. There are multiple plays this year. He says that he's more comfortable in the outfield. But the plays that stand out to me is him at shortstop, and a pop fly is hit directly behind the shortstop or a little bit to the shortstop left or right. But I would say 40 feet beyond the infield, right? Where I would say that's generally Ellie De La Cruz is the guy who stands out to me, who's really good at that play in the majors as a shortstop. But that's a tough play for a shortstop, right? Because normally it's not something you do very often. But Connor Griffin flips his hips to do that. There is a body control and a flexibility there to go with the strength that you just don't see from a whole lot of players. I would describe it as something like, again, as someone who likes football and the NFL and all this, the separator between a cornerback who's a really good cornerback and a guy who can run a 4.3 who's not a good cornerback is the difference between the guy who has that kind of hip mobility to flip the hips and go back and forth and make sudden moves like that, and guys who don't. Not many 6'4", 225 guys, pound guys, have that ability to flip the hips like that. Connor Griffin is a guy who can flip his hips like that. That's one thing that stood out to me beyond the fact that he would be big. He would be one of the bigger, more physically imposing players on a big league club right now. And again, he hasn't turned 20 yet. So that's something that stood out to me. Josh, what about you from your, again, whether it's from in person, whether it's from reporting you've done this year, but or over the years?
It's just, you don't see that kind of size paired with that kind of athleticism and kind of what you just said and that kind of speed. And it's just, I'll say this in the nicest way possible, he's a freak. Like, you don't see that kind of freaky athleticism from that kind of size and that kind of age and that kind of controlled athleticism. Like, it's not like he's got like a baby giraffe out there. Like, you see guys who are just growing into their body and don't know what they're doing. He knows what he's doing, and he's only going to get better. Like, that's we were talking about it earlier. I think that second word is in player development is development. Like, he's not the same player he was as a Mississippi high schooler, and he's not the same player. And what he looks like in the big leagues is not going to be what he looks like now. But there's improvements that I'm sure he knows he has to make, and the Pirates knows he has to make, and to a degree we know he has to make, that he will make before he winds up in Pittsburgh. Like, it's not a finished product as much as some people would like it to be just yet. But he's done a marvelous job of coming this far in such a short amount of time. And that's just what kind of, again, I'll go back to what I said earlier. It's just in the two games you see him, it's just that it factor that you know it when you see it and you don't see it but once every couple years. And there it was.
What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just how natural everything that he does in the field is. And I mean, he's got this ability to sort of hit for power without selling out for power. I wouldn't consider him a power hitter. You know, it's kind of an expression I've heard a few times, but he's more of a hitter with power. It's more of a line drive swing. You know, like, his best struck contact are like these liners that go up the middle that kind of come off the bat. Like, you know, it was like a cue ball hit with a pool stick. You know, it's just really clean. The swing is super clean. He never really, even when he swings and misses, it's not like off balance. You know, it's like usually a really good pitch location. And I think the other thing, and you mentioned this a little bit, is just how well he moves. But when he gets that second gear, it is like, you know, it's maybe not, you know, Chandler Simpson speed, but it's 70 run. That second gear, when he, you know, if the ball gets to the gap, the other night there was one where it was actually a ball hit the shortstop and the infield kind of threw it around a little bit. you know, and a couple of runs scored. Griffin ended up on third. But like his awareness of just the situation and ability to be like, make the read. Okay, he's making the throw over there. I'm going to second. Okay, that throw was missed. I'm, you know, motoring into third base. The defense didn't really have much of a opportunity to even get the out, you know. And I think it's just that explosiveness, but like the mix of all those tools with really good baseball awareness that allows it to sort of activate. Like you were talking a little bit about, you know, a corner and guys that just run really well versus guys that flip the hips. I think some of it is awareness too. And I think that that's a big part of it is there's another level of awareness here, whether it's in the field or at the plate. He's a really smart baseball player too. And I think sometimes with these super tooled up guys, that's not always the case because they can kind of do stupid stuff, do maybe, you know, technically bad things and still make, you know, it's like Cam Ward talking football, you know, throwing across his body while he's running, you know, to the other side of the field and throwing for a touchdown pass. Not a lot of guys that can do that. He's not like that. He has all those abilities, but he very much plays like very solid baseball that, you know, your grandfather or your father or your angry uncle would probably appreciate.
You're muted, Josh.
I'll keep the football train going here. Like his measurables are maybe not the composition exactly, pretty similar to Jeremiah Smith. And that's a guy who's both an athlete and a technician. And if he's good, if he's as good as he is right now, think about what he's going to be in 2 years when he's in the league. Like that's kind of what you're thinking about with Connor Griffin here.
Jeff, one other thing kind of along those lines, so that like I always tried to be as locked in on that Erie Altoona series. You were there. I was trying to watch it from home and I was locked in on it though. And we talked about it a little bit at that time. Even good hitters, you're not, this is a very difficult thing to do, to hit, right? And so even in key games, you're not locked in on every single pitch. Sometimes you have a pitch where you get fooled. Sometimes you have a swing where you're like, why did I swing on that? All these things. I can't give you a reminder. I cannot remember. Doesn't mean that every decision was perfect for Connor Griffin, but it did feel like pitch after pitch after pitch in that series. And he did hit over 500 in that series, if I remember right. But
600, was 6 for 10 with three walks.
6 for 10 with three walks. I struggle to come up with two pitches where he looked bad, where it was a bad take, where it was a bad swing, where it was a bad chase. He just seemed like every pitch, this was easy. He was operating at a faster level than anyone trying to pitch to him.
Yeah, I don't think that's wrong. And I'm going to double check now. I don't believe he struck out in the series. If he did, it was once. I think that he maybe swung and missed on three pitches over the three games. There was one in the first game, two in the same at bat in the second. I don't think he missed anything in the third. He might. And I think he actually put more balls in play for hits, almost like 100% more than he actually had swings and misses. And this is a 19-year-old at Double A. And I mean, Erie's pitching isn't phenomenal, but he was
also not terrible either. I mean,
but they weren't young. You know, they're like 24, 23, 24, 25-year-old guys that have been in the Eastern League. I think one of the guys that actually pitched in that game might have come in to face him at one point. Might have been in AAA for a good chunk of the season, and they sent him back down. So it's an older team, Erie, too. So, I mean, he wasn't facing, you know, the best arms in the minors in this series, but, you know, he was facing experienced arms and guys that should typically diced up a 19-year-old with a month of Double A, you know, experience. So I think it's just, yeah, there's not much with Griffin that you can really nitpick.
Okay, now this is where this will get scarier. And I mean is from a standpoint of I'm trying to hold myself back a little bit here because we love prospects and we love really good prospects. And by Connor Griffin's our number one prospect game going into the offseason. So clearly we think he is an elite prospect. But I wanted to kind of point out, like we have had this run of shortstops who have been our minor league player of the year in recent years. Jackson Holliday is one example. I'm not going to compare Connor Griffin to Jackson Holliday. They both are 19, but I would say that on a purely athletic power, size, arm, all these things, we wrote about at the time, Jackson Holliday played shortstop in the minor leagues. His arm was going to mean he was going to be a big league second baseman down the road. No one will ever say with Connor Griffin, if he stays healthy, that his arm is not capable of playing shortstop. So we can kind of put, I would say Holiday's a little different type of player. And I would say also Holliday has power, but I would say that we're talking about in Jackson Holliday's case, to use a Jeff analogy he's used with me, it's a very high revving V6, you know? And in, I would say in Griffin's case, you're talking about more of a big block V8 or maybe more like a Ferrari V12, where you're talking about there's more cubic inches there. There's just more headroom to develop the power because he's bigger, he's stronger, all that. But there's also two other shortstops who are now two of the best players in the game at the major league level who have recently been our minor league player of the year. Gunnar Henderson, who I would say kind of wasn't as high a draft pick, but had a similar kind of development path, was Alabama, not Mississippi, but, you know, high school from not one of these hotbeds, not a California high school kid, not a Florida high school kid, and then really popped after improving his swing and developing his swing and getting better, getting bigger, getting stronger, all that. And then the one who kind of was the anointed one, almost going back to, you know, when he reached high school, I remember the first times I was hearing about how great Bobby Witt Jr. was, I think was going into his freshman year of high school. I remember talking to scouts, you know, when he was going into his sophomore year of high school, it was like, I would take Bobby Witt Jr. 1-1 right now if he was available in this year's draft. Bobby Witt Jr. was always thought to be that guy. And here you are, Bobby Witt Jr. is that guy. I'll start with you, Jeff. If you're comparing, we're not saying that Connor Griffin is going to be Bobby Witt Jr. We now know that with Bobby Witt Jr. But if you're comparing Bobby Witt Jr., the prospect, or Gunnar Henderson, the prospect, to Connor Griffin, the prospect, trying to compare where they were then to where Connor Griffin is now, how do you see that comparison?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's probably the right grouping of players. In terms of his season, the age at which he did it, I think is more impressive. It's tough because Bobby Witt Jr., when he got drafted, was more or less the same age that Connor Griffin is now, right? So there is, you know, it is tough.
His age 19 season was in the Arizona Complex League. Then COVID hit. So his minor league player of the year season, when he was with 21, not 19.
Exactly. So a few years older. I think that the performance number wise was good, not as good. We didn't see as good of a hit tool. I think there was more power at that point with Bobby Witt Jr. Some of it was obviously, I think, you know, playing in AAA, I think at that point in time, 2021, when the balls were questionable, probably helped a little bit. But I think you can argue that at this point, in terms of their player of the year, minor league player of the year season, Witt's power was probably a tick better. I think you could argue, just based on how it was viewed, Griffin's hit tool was at least a full grade better, if not a grade and a half to maybe two, when you consider age and sort of the things that he did throughout the year, a lot lower strikeout rate, walks more. And then you sort of, you know, you do look at the production just from like a counting stats perspective. This number, I know it doesn't mean anything. It's a team stat to an extent. Griffin scored 117 runs this season. Like, he was among the minor league leaders in runs and RBIs while hitting, you know, 330 or whatever. And as far as I could go back.
333.
Exactly. And as far as I could go back, he's the only guy that I could find that was, you know, under 21 years of age that hit 300 with 20 home runs, 60 steals, 100 or more runs. I mean, those are pretty outrageous numbers, and just in terms of all the things that he does. So I think you could argue power a little bit for Witt, but also a couple years older. and maybe it's a push in terms of the defense. When it comes to Gunnar Henderson, maybe it's the power. And I really like Gunnar Henderson as a prospect.
I'd say Gunnar's arm.
Okay.
Dr. Griffin's arm's not good, but Gunnar's arm is special.
Kind of, yeah, so the arm is better, but, you know, the arm is so good on Griffin, it's almost like negligible, you know, if that's what you're arguing about. It's tough because I don't think there's a lot, at least in my time here, of giving this award that kind of measure up to the season that Griffin had when you factor in age, production, pro experience, all that stuff. Because, I mean, at least with, you know, to his credit and to Gunnar Henderson's credit, you know, both of those guys made big jumps behind the scenes in 2020 because they were both at the alternate sites, you know, competing with major league players. And I think that probably helped them out a little bit. And, you know, Griffin coming into the season had only seen Bridge League.
So what about you, Josh?
It's interesting because I don't have much of a history with either Gunnar Henderson or Bobby Witt Jr. I might have seen them total of 3 times in their careers. But I will say this, like, from everything I remember us writing about Bobby Witt Jr., you said you wouldn't go there, you know, putting necessarily Griffin in that echelon just yet of Witt. I will. Like, that's what, if he reaches his ceiling, that's what he's going to be. It's going to be that kind of guy. And I think, Jeff, you mentioned earlier in this call that, like, you didn't remember anybody getting, like, 5 sixes. Bobby Witt did. I remember that this, I think there were 2 players, whatever year Bobby Witt Jr. was on the cover of the handbook. And I think he was the only, one of 2 who got 6s or better across the board that year. So that is the type of player that he has a chance to be, a true 5-tool player, a true superstar. I don't know anything about car engines, so I'll let you guys, I'll take your word for it. I'll say he's more like a jungle cat. He's a panther. He's La Pantera. Sorry, Luis Robert. You might have to acquiesce that nickname to Connor Griffin at this point. But, yeah, I mean, it just, I wish I could be more technical about it, but he just drips superstar. And it's really good. Someone asked me in my chat this morning, like, you know, once Connor Griffin gets there, what do the Pirates need to contend? More of him. More Connor Griffins.
3 Connor Griffins. I think 3 would be enough.
The really sad thing about all these 3 guys we're talking about, Bobby Witt Jr. and Gunnar Henderson, and Connor Griffin's not in the big leagues, but neither of those other 2 teams are going to make the playoffs this year. It really stinks that they have franchise-level, you know, shortstops, and they're not going to be in the playoffs. So you need more than just a Connor Griffin and, in the Pirates' case, a Paul Skeens and next year a Jared Jones and some more guys around it. You can get creative and maybe deal from that wellspring of pitching and Bubba Chandler and get something to complement it, or you wait a little longer and see if Edward Florentino turns out to be outfield Connor Griffin Jr. But it's a really nice building block. It's a crown jewel waiting to be surrounded by other lesser jewels.
Before, I did want to note that to Jeff's point earlier on about, you know, like he thought he swung and missed 3 times. Good memory. So I now have the numbers for it. He saw 52 pitches in the Eastern League playoffs in 3 games. He chased 1 pitch out of the zone in 52 pitches. He swung and missed 3 times, and he put 10 balls in play and, you know, and had 6 hits on those 10 balls in play, 5 singles and a double. Basically a very much up the middle approach, but that just kind of summarized what we're talking about. He chased 1 pitch out of the, in a key 3 game playoff series, he chased 1 pitch and he missed 3 and he put 10 in play. That is the kind of ratio that you will, and to go to Josh's point, by the way, also the guy who I hesitate to bring up, but who body wise Connor Griffin does remind me of, he's a little taller than him, but like the neck, the thing I remember about Mike Trout when he was coming up was high school draftees going, you know, in their first year in pro ball, don't have necks that look like they can't fit in shirts. And Mike Trout's did. Connor Griffin's does too. And that's where I'm getting concerned. I don't want to go overboard here, right? Like, because I haven't had I haven't had that scout who's told me Connor Griffin is Mike Trout. And so I don't want to. You have?
I have. This
but
was
that's what I
a little
that's
earlier
what I
when it was when it was a little more possibly in the outfield. That was, you know, early in the season was like might be Trout. Like, that's why I hesitated to bring it up, but you popped that cork. So
that's what I see. And again, that I hesitate to say it because you do not. Mike Trout's one of the great players of all time. I know injuries have derailed the second half of his career and all that, but Mike Trout is one of those players who you will, you know, when I'm 80, I'll be like, I saw Mike Trout play. That's one of the ones, you know, there are a few of those. And again, so I don't want it to be like Connor Griffin, 7-time All-Star, you know, like one of the best players the Pirates have ever had. Disappointment. He wasn't Mike Trout or whatever we're talking about. But the best way I could put it is, when we were talking about him being our new number one, we kind of asked around and all, and we got pretty strong feedback. Yes, that's the guy. That's the guy. I don't want to step on our own like off-season top 100, but I feel much more so now. Like, this is a great time for shortstops. This is a great time for young prospects. When we got, you know, Kevin McGonigal, Jesus Mate, J.J. Weatherholt, Leo DeVries, Sebastian Walcott. We could keep going down the list. I do think, though, to summarize this before we move on, I do feel like we are talking about a prospect who is in a different realm, though. Like, if you're comparing him, we love Jesus Mate, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're comparing Jesus Mate to Connor Griffin, Jesus Mate, I would say, may have a better understanding of the strike zone. I don't know what else I would say he's clearly better at. Arm? And again, if you're saying arm, it's like you're saying by this much, not by a lot, right? Jesus Mate's got a really good arm. Jesus Mate's not as good a shortstop defensively.
No, those not are the close. Questions with Jesus Mate. Is he going to stick at shortstop? And it's probably not. But and I don't think they need him to in Milwaukee, quite frankly. But these are, I don't know how to say this without seeming like I'm slighting Jesus Mate. He's an elite prospect, but these are different animals.
Mm-hmm.
These are different species of human. Like, stand them next to each other and you'll see what I mean.
Connor Griffin runs more. He's bigger. He's stronger. I think he might have a better just pure hit tool. Although when you incorporate in the plate discipline, and again, Mate's younger, but Mate's not that much younger because we are talking about a 19-year-old in this case. When you talk about, again, like Kevin McGonigal's, when you talk about the Leo DeVries is could be really good. But Jeff, to kind of bring it back to you before we move on, like, but when we're talking about these, we keep talking about it. The difference between Connor Griffin and everyone else we're talking about here is none of the rest of them. Sebastian Walcott is the biggest of the rest of these guys, but Sebastian Walcott is your, I would say, is your much more typical baseball player, big framed shortstop who can move, but he's not going to be a seven runner. He's not going to be, you know, he's not, you wouldn't say right now, Sebastian Walcott, if you wanted to, could just go to the center field and be a seven center fielder. Connor Griffin could be a seven center fielder if you wanted. Is he kind of like, when we talk about this, is he on a different tier than all these other elite shortstop prospects we're talking about?
Yeah, I think so. I just think it's the balance of all the school, all the tools. There really isn't one area with Griffin that you can pick apart, where I think there's some with all these guys. Like, his angles maybe aren't perfect yet. He hasn't learned to like get into his pull side power yet, but he's 6'4" and hits the crap out of the ball. Like, kind of doesn't need to, you know. If he wants to hit 40 home runs, he'll probably have to be able to do that. Probably can do 25 or more as he's currently constituted, right? And like, I don't really know if there's any other guy that checks all the boxes, doesn't have a bigger glaring hole, you know.
It's fun. It has been fun to watch him play. It has been fun to award him Baseball America's 2025 Minor League Player of the Year. That was a fun pod to talk about because, again, we'll do this again. Like, the funny thing is we're going to talk about the Pirates in the offseason. There's a lot of good prospects to talk about. We're going to talk about Connor Griffin. We will do a top 100 podcast. We're going to talk a lot about Connor Griffin. We're going to talk about – I apologize if you don't want to hear about Connor Griffin because you're going to hear about a lot about Connor Griffin until the day he graduates from prospect status.
If you don't want to hear about Connor Griffin, what are you doing on this podcast,
Pete? Fair. Very fair. Yeah. So – okay, so that's our Connor Griffin podcast. That leads into Prospect Soapbox, which we always end this with, which is we are going to each talk about a non-top 100 prospect. I'll kick it off this week because I don't even know if you guys had figured out. Maybe you have, but I have one, definitely. The other end of the spectrum from Connor Griffin. Nothing against Brian Torres. I am a Brian Torres believer. That is a former Baseball America Independent Leagues Player of the Year. Came up pre-pandemic and a little bit post-pandemic, the Giants system, if I remember right, was catching at one point. The rare catcher who then ended up playing infield and ended up being an outfielder. The main thing, though, about Brian Torres that we have seen, and why, that's why he was our indie player of the year, and now he has gone to, he went to AA and he was a Texas League batting champ. Went to AAA this year at Memphis. He hit well over 300, and he led the minors in OBP. He is a guy who can really hit. I am not going to tell you he is older, obviously, because he has taken the path of being released, having to make his way in indie ball for multiple years, and then getting back into affiliated. This is an older minor league. This is more of a minor league vet. But I do hope that we will get to see Brian Torres play in the majors because Brian Torres, I would say, has really kind of shown that he deserves that shot. You know, he is a over 300 hitter for his minor league career. He is over a 320 hitter for his full season minor league career, which kind of gives you the, hey, the post-pandemic second stage career of Brian Torres. Gets on base. There is a little bit of power there. There's some athleticism. He can run. There's just a lot to like. Role player, probably, sure. But I would hope that at some point we will see Brian Torres in the major leagues. Josh, who's your prospect soapbox?
Well, I'm going to cheat in a major way, and I am going to say the back of the Giants system, basically.
That's not cheating. That's the way Jeff and I do that regularly, where we will pull out guys we like from the back of systems we do.
Well, you don't normally invite me on this podcast, so I don't know.
No, we do.
But in any case, you know, there's a lot of guys in the back, and we don't talk about Josmar Gonzalez because he's on the top 100, so let's forget he exists. But he's not far behind is Johnny Lovell, who he didn't quite match his production from the ACL when he got to the Cal League, but you still got evaluators all summer raving about him. Kaner Martinez in the ACL club, he's a pop up guy who was really good this year. Fastball in the mid to upper 90s, with a banger slider and a changeup that jumped, I don't know, two grades from start to start when I saw him, which is pretty impressive considering I'd heard he learned it like the week before I got to the ACL. They got Luis De La Torre, who's a little older and dominated in the, not the FCL, certainly, the ACL and then the Cal League. And, you know, this is a guy who has now stuff, who's a little more raw than you'd expect to be a 20, or not raw, a little more down in the system than you'd expect to be for a 22-year-old. All those guys are starting to coalesce into something really interesting at the back of their system. And it's, you know, they've got Eldridge, obviously, he's the big boy. But these guys in a couple years might form the nucleus of a really good Giants club.
We've been talking about the Giants are, there's some interesting stuff that's building there. I agree. But what about you, Jeff?
All right. I have a really interesting prospect. So one of, I'll put it this way. There are three hitters over the last two seasons that have a minimum 700 plate appearances that hit 320 or better. One of them is Brian Torres. Another one of them is Justin Crawford. And the last one is Keaton Anthony. I've seen this guy probably a dozen times over the last two seasons between spring training, double A games, triple A games. And he's constantly hit. There's not a lot of game power at this point. It's 24 years old. He's pretty much first base only. At times, I wondered if he was related to Roman Anthony because they have the same last name and a very similar build. But the underlying data is really good. He's top 10 over the last two seasons in the minors and WRC Plus with a 145. Over the last 2 years, spanning 792 plate appearances, he's hit 325 in the highest levels of the minors with an 866 OPS. You dig into the data under the hood, and it's really pretty good. 16% in zone miss, isn't passive. It's a 48.5% swing rate. He will chase a little bit, but the contact rates are very high. And there's underlying power here, just not a lot of pull side power. It's kind of the only thing he doesn't do very well. But it's a 104 90th percentile, which is about major league average, a 90.4 mile per hour average EV this season. And those are on Hawkeye devices, so you can kind of trust it. Really, the only thing he doesn't do is pull the ball. Do I think he's a big league regular? Definitely not. But these kind of guys fascinate me because they're kind of like back end of the top 30, maybe like 31 to 40 kind of guys where you always have that sneaking suspicion, like, could this guy come up and be like Ty France? Could it just be like that second division or like lower level team, like kind of replacement level guy that has a couple of good seasons in the big league because he can make a lot of contact and he's tough to strike out. I just find guys like that to be kind of fascinating.
That's what the soapbox is for. That's what we were wanting to do here. We want to kind of shed a spotlight on some of the guys who are not necessarily always the guys who's the next on the 100, but guys who are interesting, who could be big leaguers, who aren't going to rank in our top 100 or the top 10s of an organization. I think those are three great examples of that. This is really good. This is a good way to end it. We hope you enjoyed this edition of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast. If you did, go over to baseballamerica.com. We have so much content on this. We have stories about Connor Griffin, Player of the Year. We have statistically, you can look at how Connor Griffin's stats for this year as Player of the Year match up against every minor league Player of the Year that we've ever chosen. And by the way, we've been picking these since 1981. And I can say, having just entered all those stats, proud of the vast majority of them. When we pick minor league Player of the Year, I should say this more often. We're not just trying to pick the best season of the minors. We often do not pick the best season in the minors. We are picking the best season in the minors by a prospect who we believe is on their way to MLB excellence. And there's a couple of things that jump out for that. No one ever over the age of 24 has won our Player of the Year, minor league Player of the Year. Usually it's a 19, 20, or 21-year-old. Why? Because those are the players who combine the production. Because again, we're not giving this award to our top prospect. You have to have an exceptional season. Connor Griffin this year hit .333, as we mentioned. That's the highest batting average by a teenager in full season ball since Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in 2018 when he hit .381, which, by the way, minor league player of the year type season. Yes, Vlad Jr. hit .381. You're our minor league player of the year. Seasons like that are the ones that we want to reward, but then we also want to look back on and say that we had Hall of Famers like Derek Jeter and Frank Thomas and Joe Mauer. We've had future Hall of Famers. We talked about Mike Trout. Mike Trout was our minor league player of the year. By the way, one of the most fun stories I ever got to write was telling the story, which I believe was the first time I'd ever been told back in 2011 or what it was, 2012, of the story of how the Angels drafted Mike Trout. We want to highlight future stars as minor player of the year. As you can tell, we do believe that Connor Griffin is going to be a future star. So, for Josh, for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.